Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about foster, adoptive, and kinship care. I'm Dawn Davenport. I am the host of this show, but did you know that in addition to this podcast, we also have a nonprofit called, you wait for it here, Creating a Family. That's it, creatingafamily.org. It is a national nonprofit that is serving for training and supporting foster, adoptive, and kinship families. So today we're going to be talking with a set of triplets that were separated at birth. I think we can learn a lot about adoption and about how adoption is processed and about separation from siblings and separation from parents. Absolutely fascinating. We will be talking today with Kendall, Julianne, and Ricky. They are triplets who were conceived through donor sperm and separated at birth through adoption. They now reside all together in Austin, Texas, and they host a podcast called Luke, Who Is Your Father? In this podcast, the first season, they talk about their story, and then they're going to expand and have season 2, 3, 4, whatever, that talk about other people coming from unusual family circumstances and help these folks connect and share their stories. Just to get everybody up to speed, I'm going to give the basic outline of their story. Kathleen was married to Lee, and Kathleen wanted a child, but Lee did not or wasn't sure. Eventually, he relented, and Kathleen used donor sperm to get pregnant. This was not through IVF, so this was a naturally conceived set of triplets. She found out she was pregnant with triplets at some point, and then after the babies were born, she placed two of them for adoption with the same family. Ricky was raised by Kathleen and Lee, and Julianne and Kendall, who go by Jules and Kenny, were raised by their adoptive parents, Tina and Ken. They were reunited occasionally starting at age 11. So hopefully, that is the basic outline, guys, of the story. So for the audience. And so welcome, Jules, Ricky, and Kenny to Creating a Family. We're so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much.
We're so happy to be here.
I thoroughly enjoyed, in fact, I found it interestingly addicting, the first season of of Luke, Who Is Their Father. Honestly, it was suggested by somebody in our audience, said, it was a Facebook message in our group saying, have you heard of this podcast? I said, no. And honestly, people approach me a lot and want me to listen to things or review books and things like that. And I honestly don't have the time to do that much. And I thought, well, okay. So I started with the first one. And all of a sudden, I was like, I want to listen to the second one. I want to listen to the third one. So I thoroughly recommend it. You did a great job on the story. You also did a great job of being very vulnerable and very honest, which is, I think, hard. I don't think it's hard. I know it's hard. And so I appreciated that. So I'm really looking forward to talking with you. First of all, I think we should start with Kathleen, who is Ricky's mom and Jules and Kenny's birth mom. And I wanted to talk with her experience. First of all, Ricky, I had a question. Why did she use donor sperm? I was guessing that Lee had had a vasectomy, but I wasn't sure. Why did she choose donor sperm?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just off the top, Dot, I'm so sorry. I do want to make one small correction. It is Luke who is your father, not their father.
I thought it was that, but somehow I thought in the correction, I am so glad it makes more sense for your. All right. I apologize for everyone for that.
No,
don't apologize.
Please do not. It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
I knew it was Luke, who is your father. So yes. Sorry, everybody. When you're going to be looking, go look for Luke, who is your father. All right. So yes. So Lee had had a vasectomy, and vasectomy reversals aren't that effective. And so they just chose, or she chose, to use donor sperm. Is that the background?
Correct. He had had a vasectomy because he had two children from a previous marriage already.
Gotcha. So, and I'm going to direct these questions primarily to you, Ricky, since you were raised by Kathleen. I think many people would think it is unusual to make the decision to separate triplets. I think we could say that almost everyone would think that is unusual. So why did your mom decide to parent only one child?
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that it is unusual. And I think Kathleen would agree with that as well. Definitely something that she has spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah,
she ended up deciding to put two of the girls up for adoption because she's completely deaf.
And my dad was 58 at the time and in quite poor health already. I mean, he did end up passing away very early. But the combination of those two things, accompanied by the fact that you said it really well when you said he relented. He did not want to have another child. His son had passed away at age 28 in a motorcycle accident. So that was traumatizing for him. And he was just kind of over that and looking forward to a marriage with my mom without children. So when they found out that they were pregnant with triplets, when it had been very difficult for him to agree to even have one, he did essentially threaten to leave the marriage if she had three. So that paired with her being completely deaf really put her in a pretty tenuous position because she knew that on the one hand, she would have no husband, three kids, or on the other hand, she could have retain her relationship and keep one child.
Mm-hmm. And all this on top of Kathleen did not find out that she was pregnant with triplets until she was 7 months into her pregnancy.
Correct. That is the biggest factor.
Yeah. And you know, that was Jules who was speaking right then. Did she not have prenatal care? That's a big mistake if she was getting prenatal care.
Great question. Many mistakes were made to the extent where it completely changed precedent for the two doctor's offices
involved. Procedure.
Yeah.
Moving forward. Yeah.
So she had her prenatal care doctor, and then she went to a separate doctor for her insemination. Those two doctors did not communicate well. So after they had confirmed that she was pregnant, she did not have another ultrasound until she was 7 months pregnant.
Wow.
The only reason that she did is because she went in for her routine appointment and they measured her and she was measuring 2 inches bigger than she should have. So that's when they made the call to have an ultrasound.
Gotcha. And how premature were your births?
We were 5 weeks premature. So on top of finding out at 7 months, we thought that, oh, that's like 2 months, which is still not enough to prepare for triplets. But then you cut out the 5 weeks and you got 3 weeks between finding out you have triplets and then having
to... Right. It's just so crazy.
I know. Yeah, it is crazy. And she and Lee didn't have time to really process and talk. I tell you what's amazing is that she was able to carry you because triplets are often born. 5 weeks is early, but it's not, oh my gosh, early. It's not, oh, you know, these babies are going to be in really deep trouble.
She had a pretty heroic pregnancy in general. She had no issues, no complications, did not look like she was pregnant with triplets until probably right around that 7 month mark. And I still don't think anyone would have guessed it was triplets. That was just when people were sort of starting to say she was a little bit big for one baby. So she just had a pretty unusual pregnancy.
She's a large framed woman. She's very tall.
And very broad.
Very broad. So I think that probably played a factor as well.
I think it does when, and I speak as a woman who's 5'9", when you're tall, there's a lot of room to spread out before you pop out. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think also...
This is Kenny. Go ahead.
Another factor for deciding on adoption is that Lee and Kathleen were not well off. And babies are really expensive. And you're looking at three. So I think it was just...
Perfect storm.
Yeah.
Like, it was going to really be a stretch for them to financially accommodate one child. So when they found out with 3 weeks left that there were three, it was completely untenable for them.
Yeah. At that point. And they worked through an adoption agency, probably should say Kathleen, because I think she was probably doing this all on her own, which my heart breaks for her. I mean, I just cannot imagine the stress. So she worked through an adoption agency, and Jules and Kenny's adoptive parents, their parents were working with the same agency, obviously. So Tina and Ken, back then, I don't know, did the adoption agency choose Tina and Ken, or did Kathleen have options and she chose?
So what happened was my mom wasn't initially working with that adoption agency because she wasn't working with an adoption agency. But her friend Sybil owned the adoption agency, and Sybil had been caring for my mom while she was pregnant, cooking her meals because my father was a long-haul truck driver. But that was the adoption agency that Tina and Ken were working through. Mm-hmm. And as the girls will tell you, they had gone through a really tumultuous adoption journey up to that point. So Sybil was very glad to have a very obviously pregnant woman who needed help right away.
when it was more than one baby, that was also, I wouldn't call it a perfect storm because it was very fortunate, but it was very serendipitous. So I'll let them take it from there.
So Jules, your parents were, they had probably about the same amount of time, probably even less amount of time to prepare for twins.
Yes, I think they probably had about the same amount of time because I'm sure that Sybil and Kathleen were in contact right away. But my parents, they got married when they were 26 and they tried from the jump to get pregnant. My mom had gone through a just horrific sexual assault when she was 16. And they think that that sent her into premature menopause. So she started going through menopause at like 26, 27, 28. And they just weren't sure what it was at that time because it was not your first guess, obviously. So finally, when they started going in for fertility testing and to see what was going on, they told her that she had a better chance of being struck by lightning twice than having children.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, yeah, that has stuck with her. Yeah, that has stuck with her. And that's why we know it, because it really hurt her to hear
of
it
course.
That way.
Yeah.
And so when they started on their adoption journey, at first they were going through, I think, the Catholic Church. And they said they felt like small fish in a big pond. So when they decided to go through a, you know, more intimate route with Sybil, they did. They had two really, really, my poor mother. And I mean, my father too, but gosh, my poor mom. They had an agreement with one family that they would be adopting their baby. And then the woman that was pregnant refused to give the identity of the father. And they said, okay, we're not going to risk this. We don't know who he is. We don't know if he could just come waltzing back into our lives at any time and take our baby away. And so they moved on to the next family who this woman they were in touch with for months and months and months with the understanding that she was pregnant and that she would be giving up her baby for adoption. And very late on into it, she let them know that she had had an abortion, which of course broke my mother's, it's making me emotional, broke her heart. And they said, okay, we're going to need documentation for this to record, you know, for our records. And she couldn't provide that. And then she said she had a miscarriage and they still needed documentation and she couldn't provide that. And it turned out that she had never been pregnant. And mm-hmm. this was just a, and a you, scam. I'm sure, have mm-hmm. much more background in that than anyone, I'm sure. So they were losing faith a little bit mm-hmm. in this process and a little bit in the agency, which I hate to say. But so I think, yeah, when Sybil said, we have a family and how do you feel about twins? They actually called my parents. This was back in, you know, 1991. So my parents were in separate locations. It's not like they could.
They didn't have cell phones.
Yeah, they didn't have cell phones. And without any discussion between themselves privately, they both were like, yes, absolutely. Just overjoyed at the opportunity to be able to have twins. And yes, it had about 3 weeks notice.
Oh, babies don't need a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. All right. So, and I'm going to ask each of you I guess Jules and Kenny will have the same answer, but we'll start with Kenny. When did you find out that you were part of a triplet set? Because I assumed that Tina and Ken knew. Tina and Kim knew yes. that there were triplets being born. Right. Mm-hmm. All right. So, Kenny, when did you and Jules find out that you were part of a triplet set?
Yeah. Our parents decided to tell us after Ricky had, she had masterminded a plan because she wanted to meet us so bad. She always knew about us. So it was in a time when you go to the mall, you run into people that you know. So she was like, I'm going to have my mom take me for back to school shopping. And I'm going to ask for her to take me at a mall that's close to where they live. So then maybe I will run into them and then I will have forced everybody's hands. But when she was at the mall, she was in the shoe section, I think, and she heard a little girl say, hi, Julianne, behind her. And she was like, oh my gosh, my plan has worked. They are here. And she turned around and the little girl was talking to her because Julianne and Ricky looked so much alike when we were younger. So Kathleen had to come over and run interference. She was like, you can't tell. They don't know about us, like, or about Ricky. Please do not tell them. But then ultimately, she had to write my parents a letter and tell them about the incident. And my parents made the decision, I would assume, because they didn't want us to find out from this person who had seen Ricky and thought she was Julianne. So when we were 8, on or around Christmas, it's kind of fuzzy, Christmas or New Year's Day. And they sat us down and they told us that they had a Christmas present for us, but it was not the kind that could be wrapped. And they showed us a picture of Ricky, the spitting image of Julianne, but like not the clothes that we had, not that she had her ears pierced. And we were like, what the heck? And
yeah. They told us that that can't be. I want my ears pierced.
Yes, right. And they told us that we had a triplet. And then they took us aside separately and asked us how we felt about everything. And it was, I think, actually pretty anticlimactic for them, because I'm sure they were dreading it forever.
I'm sure they were dreading it forever. And do you remember, of course, you were 8, you may not remember, but Jules, do you remember, was it anticlimactic to you? But, well, okay. Or was it a big deal?
Yeah, there's been some talk about this. And we actually got the chance to interview someone who is really deep into donor conception and all of that. And she is donor conceived herself. And she said there's a part of her that felt like she always knew that there were more of her out there. And she found out, you know, much later. And I think that there may have been a part of me or us that felt that way, even though it may have been hard to identify, because in my parents' retelling of the story, they made it seem like I was not that shocked that we did have another sister. So I don't, you know, I can't identify that feeling now, but I do know that when I was shown this picture, I think I was very surprised. And it's so, so weird to look at someone that looks just like you and know that they are not you. It is a very, very strange feeling. I think that was more the overarching feeling rather than being really shocked or upset or dismayed or anything like that. I think it was just like such a weird feeling physically to see someone that looked just like me.
Ricky, did you know from the beginning that there were 3 babies?
Yes, I did. Don't even remember finding that information out.
Yeah.
Tina and Ken had always sent us Christmas cards and occasional update letters to my mom, and she would share those with me. So I don't, it has always been a part of my story.
Gotcha. Creating a family, and I am so proud about this curriculum. We have a curriculum. It could be used for either training or support groups. And of course, it's for foster, adoptive, and kinship families. It is a really terrific resource. Each of the curriculum, we have 25, is on a different topic that is directly relevant to what adoptive, foster, and kinship families are asking and wanting to know. You can find out more about it at parentsupportgroups.org, or you can go to our website, creatingafamily.org, hover over the training in the horizontal menu, and click on curriculum. Okay. Well, that brings up the part about sending Christmas cards and things such as that. What was the agreement at the time of the adoption about the degree of openness and whether or not everybody would tell the girls, you guys, that you were triplets, but also about the degree of openness between the families? I'm going to direct that question to you, Ricky, because it probably, I want to hear your side, what you heard from your mom, and then I'll ask Jules and Kenny what they've heard from their family. So what was the expectations that you think that Kathleen went into this, and perhaps Lee as well, expecting?
Yeah, this whole thing was really fly by the seat of your pants from the fertilization on, it seems like, because we've talked to both of our mothers and they don't seem to remember any formal stipulations around how open or closed it would be. Initially, my parents went to see Tina and Ken probably about a month after the birth, said everything was great, very friendly. We met up 6 months after our birth to take some photos, some really beautiful photos. And I think that is when Tina and Ken kind of clammed up, because it was very, very prevalent in the news at that time that a birth family could come and claim their children from the adoptive family up to 2 years after the birth. And that was happening in the news. And they were showing really visceral footage of birth families coming and actually, quote unquote, ripping children from like the adoptive family's arms. So I think after seeing us at that 6 month mark and understanding how real the situation was, they decided to close it off a little bit more. I don't think it was a formal conversation that was had. I don't think any paperwork was signed. I think that they just got a little bit more distant after that. Mm-hmm. And once the communication became less frequent, I think it just became pretty clear to my parents that the girls did not know about me, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. we also found out, and I'm just now remembering this, I think we found out when we interviewing our moms was one of the coolest things that we got to do because we've never really mm-hmm. gotten their perspective. But I think we found out that the adoption was not legal for like a year. Didn't Tina tell us that? And she called the judge by her first name.
Usually it's about 6 months. That I don't, okay, I'm not saying your case. It's usual that the babies have to live. It takes, you know, to 6 months of post-adoption checkups and things like that.
Yeah.
And just for our audience, just throwing it out there, it is very difficult for birth parents to be able to reclaim children. There's a revocation period by law. This is in 91, so I don't actually know. But now there's a revocation period, or maybe some states don't even have that. But it's a very relatively short period of time. And you'd have to show fraud. The mm-hmm. only things that sometimes happens is an identified birth father where the father was never notified. And so that can happen, or if the child is a Native American child. And so, but that's not to say that it doesn't sound like either set of parents were being given good legal advice, because I think if they had been talking with an attorney would say, nah, that really, you have nothing to worry about for the most part. It wasn't illegal per se.
Their recounting of their story, never once has an attorney been mentioned.
Yes.
It seemed like a pretty casual arrangement.
Yeah. Also, I think my mom had a lot of insecurity from the jump about not mm-hmm. being able to have babies. It was like she was knocked down a peg. And then I think when we saw Kathleen at 6 months, she just saw like the way that we were like looking up at our birth mom and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh my God, they love her mm-hmm. more than they love me. And she had to, mm-hmm. she kind of pulled back.
Because regardless of whether they could have officially reclaimed anyone, I think that that was where the hesitancy began to keep up any sort of normal meeting cadence or anything like that, for fear that they would feel more of a biological pull toward her.
I think y'all are spot on. And when I was listening to your interview with Tina, she more or less acknowledged that I think it was her insecurity. It's not an uncommon insecurity. You so want to be a parent. It is such a natural fear that I'm not really their mom and that they're going to figure it out. And it's
heartbreaking.
Hard.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking for both sides, because I can also say that from Kathleen's side, she was probably expecting something different. And the rug was ripped out from underneath her too.
Mm-hmm. I will say though, we did not find out about Ricky till we were 8, but we always knew that we were adopted. So that was always part of our story. But yeah, I think my mom was just afraid that we would feel the biological pull.
Sure. Yeah, I can get that. You know, the podcast focuses the first season on the loss of the sibling connection primarily between the three of you. I was interested in how that played out differently. So, Jules, from your standpoint, I didn't get the feeling that you were feeling this overwhelming need to connect with Ricky. Is that a fair assessment?
Before I knew she existed, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, I meant after
but
the fact.
Yes, in the time period between when we found out about her and when we actually met, I think there was probably more of a push from me. And that's just a personality thing in general. And we did find out on the season that we are identical. So I think when you know that there's someone out there that looks just like you, I think there was probably more of a push from me, but it was nothing urgent. And I think in going back over everything, we went through all those letters on the season. And then I actually had to go back over them to gather some stuff up for a different thing. And it made me sadder the second time around, which was so strange that it was when I was just reading them by myself that I think we had gone over them once in great detail. And then so going over them again, now I was really able to internalize, and it just made me really emotional and sad for Ricky. And I think mm-hmm. there's like a little bit of guilt that we weren't feeling that pull, or mm-hmm. that she wasn't reading the same letters like, oh, we want to meet you so bad. But it was, I think, the fact that Kendall and I had each other. That only child dynamic is so different. And I think the fact that mm-hmm. we had each other, Ricky was going through so much and we just couldn't relate to what she was going through. So we didn't see as much urgency mm-hmm. in meeting her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. you read the letters that you wrote to each other, probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10, or whatever. They're adorable. And
that's one word for it.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Well, if any of us have gone back and read what we wrote when we were, oh, the only thing worse is reading what I wrote when I was 16. But
like your journal. Yeah. Oh, that was so much worse. It was so much worse. The 8-year-old ones were kind of precious. And then when we started getting to high school, I was like, I can't. I literally can't read these. I can't. Yeah. I'm so embarrassed.
How cringeworthy they really were. Yeah. Ricky, it seemed your longing was just painful. It was painful to hear. It was heartbreaking because you clearly had such a great need and were being denied this. And it was just, I mean, part of me was just like, oh, come on, adults. This is just, we're getting to the point of being mean here. I mean, this child needs to, and at the point, and I was going to say that Jules and Ricky are identical.
Oh, so sorry.
No. It's totally okay. I was looking for the place to introduce it, but not that I think that matters too much. But anyway, so we know that Ricky had a strong need. Kendall, what about you?
I think I'm the reason that it took so long for us to meet her in person, because I have always had a very special relationship with my parents. And I think I was worried that if we met her and Kathleen, that my whole world would change and that our family would be different. And I didn't want that. Mm-hmm. So I think that I was probably the one to be the hesitant one. And my parents have always kept it very even, Steven, with me and Julianne. We've always had like same rules, same punishments, same everything. And like, I don't think that it would ever be an option for like her to meet her without me and that kind of thing. So they wanted to make sure that we were both ready. But they did end up kind of pulling the trigger and kind of speeding the process up, even though I wasn't ready, because Ricky lost her dad. And I think we read the letter, but my dad said that if Ricky had to lose a father, at least she could gain two sisters.
Yeah. And Ricky, you were getting ready to move to another state, which would have made getting together even harder. So I think that sounded like that played in as well. Kenny, were you afraid that your parents might prefer, was there some fear of that, that they might prefer Ricky, that now all of a sudden, you know, that there was, did any of that play in?
No.
Next question.
Why not?
Yeah, next question. No, absolutely not.
No.
Kendall was the golden child. Yeah. Oh my God. Kendall was the golden baby.
No, I think it was more probably that Julianne would like her more than me.
Well, yeah, we're going to come to talking about that. Yeah, that you would lose something. Yeah, that would make sense, particularly because they looked more alike. So even at a young age. Let me pause here to ask a favor of you. Word of mouth is how most people find out about podcasts. That's how I found out about the Luke, Who Is Your Father podcast. It was purely word of mouth. And that's how others will find out about the creatingafamily.org podcast. We would really appreciate you letting your friends know about it. That helps us. It helps us in every way. The more people, that's our mission, is to get the word and the information out to people. So you could help us by telling your friends. Thanks. All right. So it's interesting because in the adoption world, we focus more on the loss of birth parents, and in particular, the loss of birth moms. And so that's more what tends to be the focus on a lot of the adoption literature and a lot of the adoption research. But knowing indeed, of course, that when someone is adopted, they lose oftentimes birth siblings, they lose fathers, of course, and extended family as well. So there's a lot of losses, but the research and discussion tends to be more on the focus of having lost the birth mom. And it was interesting to me when I was listening to the podcast, Luke, Who Is Your Father? Notice that I got it in there correctly this time.
You're a champion, Don.
Yeah, I am a champion. All right. So, So I noticed that in there, you were very much focused, obviously, because it's the story of triplets being separated. But I was curious for how Kendall and Julianne dealt with the choice that Kathleen chose to parent Ricky, but didn't choose to parent you. I mean, that's not how it happened, but that's how a child might interpret that. So Jules, was there, and I want to hear it separately because I would assume that your answers might be different. How did you process the fact that you had a birth family that was separate and different and not a part of you? How was that something that you processed both as a child, but also as an adult?
Sure. And I think for you, I'm sure there's so much research out there that speaks to how important it is to tell your children to make their adoption a part of their story from early on. Mm-hmm. Because I think if we had found out later, there maybe would have been different feelings about that. But I think because it was woven into our fabric from the time that we can remember that we were adopted and we were, you know, given so much time to process that, that I do not remember feeling ever, why me? Why Kendall? Why did she keep Ricky? And I think it was also very clear once we started communicating with Ricky why that decision was made, you know. And I don't want to be crass, but when, you know, we're getting videos from Ricky and she is in a mobile home and she is, you know, you could just tell that our lives were very different. Mm-hmm. And we had, of course, been told that Kathleen is deaf and that her dad had already passed away. So I think it was very clear to us by the time that we were old enough to maybe have had any feelings of abandonment that we were in, I hate to say this word, but that we were in a better situation than mm-hmm. we would have been if we had stayed.
We should say that Tina and Ken were well off.
Yes. Yeah.
At that time, they ended up having mm-hmm. a change in financial circumstances yes. later.
Yeah.
But your growing up years, they were yeah. well off. So you were comparing the fact that you lived in a nice house with mm-hmm. many bedrooms, likely a pool, likely a lot of things. And no pool.
Hot well, tub.
Hot we did tub.
Have hot tub. There you go.
Steam room.
It was the 90s.
Yes. Yeah. I think if anything, there was just more of like an empathy for Kathleen and a wanting to protect our parents, which I think is more where my head goes when I think about it, is that this would get brought up. My relationship with my parents, especially when I was a teenager, was not sunshine and rainbows. And so this would get brought up in arguments and things like that. Like it was almost put onto me that I might feel that way, that I did have resentment. And then me having to buck against and be like, what? I literally forget that I'm adopted half the time. Don't throw this in my face. Don't project that on me. So I think that's more where I was coming from.
Uh-huh. Kenny, what about you?
Yeah, I think the fact that we always knew that we were adopted played a major role. And then also just how much our parents wanted us and how much they loved us and how much they worked so hard to give us just the best life. That was all we needed and all that we knew. So yeah, I think that's a major thing. Like, you know, don't adopt kids if you don't actually want them.
Yeah. We have to work hard to adopt kids generally. So yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I think just the love that they worked over time, I'm sure because we were adopted, to show us that they were our parents. And yeah, that was always just, there was never any resentment. There was never any feelings of abandonment at all.
There is a book that's written many years ago called The Primal Wound. And at the risk of oversimplifying, it's basically the idea that adopted people have a primal wound, have a need, have an opening, have a hole inside themselves from the very act of being separated from their birth mother. And it was interesting. It sounds like that, not putting words in your mouth, but Jules and Kenny, you don't feel that, lack that hole.
No, I would be interested to read that mm-hmm. because I have had some behaviors in my life that I have always attributed. Well, I'm not going to blame them on anything, but went through a really hard time after losing my dad. But I mean, I really wasn't the best kid before that. So I would be interested to read the research, but it's not something I've identified in myself, mm-hmm. but I would not discount it mm-hmm. altogether.
It's interesting, as listening to the first season, Ricky had the, it seemed to me, she had that hole, that need, but obviously she was being raised by her birth parents until mm-hmm. Lee died, then birth mom, but the hole was being separated from you, Jules and Kenny.
I think that's totally fair to say.
Yeah. I think that you guys should read that. I mean, it would be, we learn things all the time through talking to each other, things that we didn't know bothered us, et cetera. So I wouldn't discount that, like Julianne said, this could be something that comes up much later and not something super visceral, but just something to point back to in terms of forming as a human being. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Yeah, there's the book, but there's also some others that have written about that. So all of those are something to look at. I hope you guys are enjoying this conversation as much as I am. As you can tell, I'm really enjoying it. I want to pause here, though, to tell you about the free courses we offer. Thanks to the Jockey Being Family Foundation, we have 12 free courses available to you. You can access them on our website. Go over creatingafamily.org. Hover over training and click on free courses. And you can also find them by going to bit.ly/JBF support. That's bit.ly/JBF support. I want to come back to that feeling of being the odd man out or the odd woman out or odd girl out. It seemed like, Ricky, you certainly felt that because Jules and Kendall had been raised as siblings, you know, so they had that. But Kenny, you also seem like you've alluded to it earlier, felt that because Kenny, was it apparent from the beginning that Jules and Ricky had more of an initial connection or not?
They've always been very similar in looks, obviously, mannerisms, personality, that kind of thing. They're very vivacious and bubbly and loud. And I'm more of like quiet, kind of blunt, reserved, sort of not overly excitable. So I think that has lent itself to, yes, feeling a little bit of the odd person out just because, you know, it's a lot of powerful personalities competing with each other and we're all very competitive. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Ricky, from your standpoint, was it hard for you to know that you weren't raised with them?
Very much. Not so much a why not me feeling in terms of being raised by their parents or in that situation, but in terms of being raised separately from them, yes. And that's something we're still navigating that dynamic today. We haven't had like a ton of time altogether. So yeah, I think Julianne is the only one not suffering from the odd man out.
Well, I was going to come to her.
Because,
that's not true.
No, and I think it will be interesting because I don't think that that is probably true. But it's still very difficult for me to navigate like any sort of conflict with them. And they navigate that with each other very well.
Because they were raised as sisters and they were used to fighting.
Exactly.
And making up.
Yes. When we were younger and I was just starting to participate in things with them, I think at times I did feel a little bit bullied for things I didn't know or something like that. Just feeling very out of place. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever wish that you could change places and be raised by Tina and Ken?
I really don't think I did somehow. Yeah. I don't remember feeling that at all. We were not well off, but my parents did love me very much. And I never had to doubt their mutual adoration for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like I was surrounded by people who were in a different circumstance. Mm-hmm. That was a communal thing that we all had, that it was a lower income community and difficult things happened to all of us. So it was sort of like a lobster in a boiling pot of water, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't remember ever feeling that way.
Both of my parents were raised without means, and they have both said the same thing to me, that they really weren't aware that they were poor because everybody around them was in the same boat, and it just never really entered their mind that it was also at a time when there wasn't a lot of, you know, the ability to communicate and see how the other half lived. So that might have made a difference. But yeah.
Oh, yes. I think if social media had been a part of our lives at that point, I would have been even more tortured,
yeah,
which would have been so annoying. But no, it's not like I was surrounded by people who were going up and skiing in the mountains or having nice meals or anything like that. So I was not exposed to that. So I was not left wanting. I thought my Tweety Bird bedspread in our mobile home was the best thing ever.
we would be remiss not to raise the issue of donor conception, because I know that part of the latter couple of episodes were talking about your search for the sperm donor. Who was the driving force for the desire to find the sperm donor?
I'll give you one guess.
Okay, the hand raised is Ricky. I think we all could have guessed that, but all right. So
yes, that was definitely me. My mom told me when I was 13 that we were donor conceived. That was a secret that she had kept from me because of my father's request. He did not want that to separate us at all. He didn't want me to view him as any less of a father. So after he passed, my mom decided to share that information with me 3 years later. It wasn't really something I thought about through high school. Graduated high school. As a part of my going away, my mom gave me our sperm donor paperwork for the first time, which was a lot of biological data and then like a questionnaire that he had filled out. And his answers were very sweet and funny and just very sweet. And so we had sort of all collectively raised questions, or at least me and Julianne, about that. And then when I turned, I think 26 or 27, that's when I decided to take a DNA test to see if there was anything there, because we didn't have a way to find him otherwise.
Gotcha. All right. So you and Jules actually met him. You did find him and you met him. Jules, did meeting the sperm donor, did it fulfill any unknowns? Did it answer any things that were important to you, or you were just along for the ride?
I can say I was just along for the ride. I think, and you know, Ricky and I have discussed this because it did have a different impact on each of us. And when we're getting better at talking and actually trying to dig and figure out why things affect us in different ways. And I came to the realization that this was more of the same for me, right? I had met Kathleen before. I had been raised by two people that were not biologically my parents. So to meet this person that had given me half of my DNA, I think I didn't go in expecting to have any kind of aha moments or anything like that. And I did not come out of it with any sort of aha moments at all. I was just like, he's a great guy. Now I understand where I get my hands and my face from. And I was more there for Ricky, and he's great. But it did not have any kind of, you know, I think we all get a little bit nervous when we're like, oh, shoot, what if he listens to this, because we don't want that to come across as callous or anything like that. But yeah, it was just, my parents were my parents, and we had such a affection and love for our father that I definitely went into it expecting to keep that and still feel exactly that way.
And just so that the audience knows, Jules and Kendall lost their dad, Ken, senior year of high school, I think.
Yeah, 2 weeks before high school graduation. Yeah.
Right.
Don, you are really incredible.
Yeah, you are
the
incredible.
Things that you remember are, I am taken aback. You're really amazing.
All right. So Ricky, for you, what did finding your sperm donor, did that answer questions? Did it fulfill something that you needed fulfilled?
Curiosity. To find him and then hear from his family about their lineage, that we're very much Greek, very much Mexican, that it's a family full of architects, artists, lawyers, really highly intelligent people, really successful people that like to do the same things we do, like art and cook and things like that, was really nice, because I'm only so similar to my mother, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So really nice to see where a lot of that came from. It did not fulfill like a fatherly place for me, or a fatherly hole for me.
That was filled by Lee.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that until I met him. So I just had to sort of deal with the fact after that my dad did pass away. Mm-hmm. And I was so young at the time that I don't think that I had dealt with that. Like, I thought that I could have like a do-over or fill that hole. Mm-hmm. So then I had to reckon with the fact that I can't. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of traumatic, honestly. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't change anything. So glad that we did it, because there's no way that Julianne and I would have left that stone unturned anyway. There's just no way. But it brought up a lot more than I thought that it would.
Yeah, I can get that. Kenny, on the other hand, was wishing that perhaps the stone had been left just where it was sitting.
No, not necessarily.
Kenny, for you, you chose not to meet him, but knowing that they met him, was that anything important? Did they find out information that was any importance to you?
Not really, I don't think. I chose to not go because I had been traveling and I couldn't make another trip and also just didn't have this like huge need to like meet him. Mm-hmm. Probably similarly to how I felt when we first found out about Ricky. But mm-hmm. I don't know what the future holds with meeting him, but it is nice to have, you know, just someone out there that you can share fun things with. And he's been very good about being like proud of us and that kind of stuff. So in terms of how it could have gone, I think it's one of the better mm-hmm. stories that we've heard with people finding their mm-hmm. we've horror stories.
Hugely. Yeah. We feel very fortunate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's complicated, but knowing, if nothing else, having health information mm-hmm. is huge for many donor conceived. So my last question is, what are the lingering impacts of having been separated at birth? And I'd like to hear each of yours. And Kenny, let me start with you. I think Ricky has alluded to the fact that it isn't like, oh, it's like we were always together. The reality is you weren't. So what are the impacts that you see in your life now, in your relationship with them?
I think that the lasting impact is just we're having to learn what this relationship is, what it means, how to navigate it. And it's kind of tough, mm-hmm, especially because we haven't historically been super open and vulnerable with each other. So we're kind of just trying to figure out like how to be sisters and mm-hmm. also friends and what that looks like for each of us and how we're going to honor that with each other. I mean, I think it can only get better. So hopefully.
Ricky, what about you? The lingering impacts of separation.
I think I'll always have a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I think it really influences a lot I do in my life in terms of like having really high standards for other people at this point and being a bit of a perfectionist. And yeah, I think it really comes down to always working to overcome that feeling of separation and having mm-hmm. a bit of a different attitude about it, I suppose. But on the other hand, I also feel incredibly fortunate because I got what I wanted the entire time. You know what I mean? And just because it hasn't been as easy as maybe I would have perceived it to be as an 8-year-old, I'm still in a way better position than I was before this happened. So I'm just mm-hmm. eternally grateful.
Mm-hmm. And Jules?
You are such a great interviewer, Dawn. I think we're going to be taking some tips from you because I feel like my answer to this has probably even changed. Just it's always changing. I've just had a hard time over the past probably a good decade or so. So I don't know how much of that colors just how I feel, because a lot of me does. I feel like the more we kind of talk about it, I do just get a little bit sad. I don't know. We are in such a good place now, and I'm so happy for that. I think the biggest part of me now is just thinking, you know, what I could have done better in the process of us coming back together. Just kind of grappling with that. And of course, wanting to navigate these relationships in just the best way possible and knowing that that's not always possible because we're learning as we go. But overall, I think lingering effects, we have a great story to tell, right? And now we're finally at the point where we're curious for new information. We want to hear from our moms. We want to know mm-hmm. everything that went into this. It's giving us the opportunity to speak with people like you and people in the donor conception industry and just becoming more, we're all thirsty for knowledge always. So becoming more educated about just everything that went into this has been amazing. Of course, building these relationships has been amazing, but I think it just feels like there's always going to be something to work on and to just get better at.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you're all finally living in the same place. Not that you can make up for not having been raised together, but I do think that proximity, and then the podcast is a wonderful opportunity to it's almost like it's an artifice that's been placed. So you have to ask, you have the excuse to say these things and ask these questions, and you're not being nosy. You know, it's all for the art, you know, we have to. So, yeah, so it's great. Thank you so much, Julianne, Ricky, and Kendall, for being with us today. I highly recommend everyone to the podcast, Luke, Who Is Your Father? It's on Spotify. I think it's on Apple Podcasts. It's on all of them. It's wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can surely find that. And their subsequent seasons are going to be interviewing other people about their own unusual family circumstances. So the second season hasn't dropped. I think it's just the first season.
It did. It dropped
Monday.
Oh, second season is out, guys. Yeah. All right. So you've got two. Oh, this is great. So you can binge. So you've got two things. I love that. If I could get a binge going, that's
same.
Great. So you've got the first season, which is about their story. And so now you've got a second season. So get on it, guys. Luke, Who Is Your Father? Thank you guys so much for being with us today. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Dawn.
You have really, been truly, really, truly wonderful. We so appreciate you.
Before you leave, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to Vista Del Mar. They have been a longtime supporter of Creating a Family and this podcast. They are a licensed nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They offer home study only services as well as full service infant adoption, international home studies and post-adoption support, as well as a foster to adopt program. You can find them online at vistadelmar.org/adoption.